Good morning. Thanks to all of you who didn't decide that spring break started early. So last time we ended up on this exercise. We have a bunch of possible ways to make a hash function where we're looking up information about probably people based on a birth date. And we had to meet these properties that we have something deterministic, evenly distributed, and fast. When we list off, person pointed out correctly that, well, birth year isn't so great. If we have some collection of people, probably they have similar birth years. So we have a relatively small set of possible birth years. And that means that it's not going to be very evenly distributed. We'll probably end up with like three birth years that are the majority of the people, or even if we have a more varied set, like 10 or 20. And that's actually going to be a lot worse than most of these other choices. And it also seemed, you know, from what I wrote down originally, evenly distributed, that this is also bad for like here or here, here, because it means that now we have all our values are going to be around, you know, if our normal birth year is like 1990, they're all going to be around 1990 plus, you know, something. And that seems not so evenly distributed as like 0 to 30. This doesn't actually matter because a key thing about how we're using these hash functions is we take the mod, our table size. So it matters after we map it onto that table, is it going to still be evenly distributed? So if everything's offset by 10,000, not a problem. Like, if we have evenly distributed between 10,000 and 10,100 versus 0 and 100, it's going to be the same as far as how good a hash function it is. But, like, from what I originally wrote, makes sense that you'd say, oh, everything's around 1,000, that seems less even. So how about any complaints about any of the other functions I have up here that make them good or bad as far as these properties of hash functions?
Day of the month is too many collisions.
So the day of the month, yeah. So this, the day of the month, there are only 30 or so possibilities. So if we have more than 30 people, we're gonna have lots of collisions. We just have a limited number of possibilities for what that could possibly be. So while that's not gonna have this clustering problem, if we take a random selection of people, it's unlikely we're gonna end up having everyone born on the 17th of some month. It's not gonna have any possibility of scaling to hundreds of people and not having lots of conflicts. So it's not great. But it's better than the birth year because we're not going to have those clusters. Other things? Yeah.
For F, if anyone's born in January or on the first of the month, they're all going to have the same value of 0.
Yeah, so F, looks, kind of clever, but because we take month minus 1, if we have January, we're going to get 0. Everything in January. So a 12th-ish of our people are gonna have 0, and everyone in the first, so a 30th-ish of people are gonna have 0. So we have, probably relatively evenly distributed for everyone else, but we have all these people who happen to match to 0, and that's gonna make it a bad for our hash table. We'll have one entry of our hash table, the 0 entry, with lots of things using it. That's gonna make this a bad hash function. How about any of the others? Yeah.
I think C would always be changing because today is always changing.
Yeah, so C, I run my program for a couple days, like it's a web server. I compute my hash table, and then the next day, all my hash table lookups don't work. Also, C is a little suspect from the fast point of view because it's a little complicated to take two dates if they're like in year, month, day format and figure out the number of days between them because you need to account for leap years and all that stuff. So it's probably not super fast, though it's not gonna be that bad. And so probably D and E are good options. I'm not actually sure if any of them is materially better than the other. That's usually the sort of thing you would do to make a hash function for this. Yeah. Yeah, so E clearly has more exact duplicates. So probably D looks better. And I chose D to multiply times powers of 2, which turns out to be faster, so it should actually be pretty fast to do, even though there's multiplication, which you might think of as probably slower than addition. Okay. So any questions about any of these conclusions we have about our these hash functions? Okay. So last time, before we get to that, we talked a bit about amortized time complexity and parse trees, and then we started talking about hash tables. So before I move on to talk more about hash tables, hash functions, anything from the topics from last time? Yeah. Any questions people have? Okay. Not right now. Okay. So let's go through what hash table operation looks like in our nice normal case. So here I have a table of size 10. So my indexes are 0 through 9. And my keys are integers. And commonly, when we have integers and we don't know anything about them, we're going to choose this hash function. Hash of k is k. And this assumes if we don't know anything about what our input integers are, this is probably what you should do because, well, if they start evenly distributed, they're still going to be evenly distributed. And, you know, probably they aren't evenly distributed, but if we don't know in what way, we can't really make a hash function that's going to make them evenly distributed. Random, or, you know, by just guessing probably. So this is usually, you know, the sort of thing people do. And when we want to figure out the index, we're going to take the hash function and mod the table size. So we're going to take, in this case, mod 10. So let's say we want to insert this list of numbers, 7, 18, 41, and 34. So when we want to insert 7, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take 7. That's our key. We're going to put it in our hash function. We're going to get 7. We're going to take that mod 10. We're going to get 7. That means that we're going to use bucket 7. So we put 7 in there because nothing was there, so that's the right thing to do. And that's in our hash table. So note that, kind of omitted from this representation, we need some way when we're actually implementing this hash table to distinguish between, you know, a key is there and a key is not. So conceptually, our structure for a hash table bucket, either we have some special key we know is never used, and we have an array of integers, or we have an array of some class with like a boolean, is there something there, and a key. But we need some way to distinguish between, you know, this zero entry here where there's nothing, and like if there was actually the key zero stored there. Then we'll go to 18. So we take the hash of 18. It's 18. Take that mod 10, we get 8. We use bucket 8, so we put 18 there. And we've stored that key. Take 41, do the same thing. We end up in bucket 1. And we take 34, ends up in that. So this is how we insert things. So we just take the hash, mod the table size, put something in that bucket. And we aren't dealing with some special cases here. So here I'm assuming that the bucket was initially empty. We'll talk later on what we do, what if it's not. And so if it's initially empty, I just set it so I know that there's something there and I write down the key I have. I need to write down the key because later on when I look something up, I don't just want to find out something got to bucket 7, I want to find out it was 7 that got there, not 17 or 27 or 37. So for example, let's go through these looking at this hash table, and these are all the three cases you need to deal with. So if we look for 34, we'll take 34 mod 10 equals 4. That's the index we look in. So we look in this bucket 4, and we find, yes, 34 is there. So we say, yes, we found it. You look up 28. We take the hash of 28 is 28. Take that mod 10. We get bucket 8. And we look in bucket 8, and we say, OK, there's something there. So we check, is it equal to what I'm looking for? And the answer is no. 28 is what we're looking for. 18 is what's there. We didn't find it. It's not a match. And if we look up 90, we take 90, the hash of 90 with this hash function is 90. Take that mod 10, we get 0. And we look in bucket 0, and we find out there's no key there whatsoever. So we just say, so we don't find it, because there's just nothing there at all. So those are the three cases we deal with in find. So this is sort of a pictorial illustration of the algorithms for adding things to a hash. So find, what we do is we compute the index by taking the hash, mod the table size, and then we check the bucket at that index, and we need to double check the key. We can't just assume it's there because there's something there. We actually need to check the key because other things go use the same bucket. And when we insert or remove, we compute the index again, and we do something with that bucket to add the key or remove it. And we can talk about find max or min. So if we're comparing to our balanced trees, you know, we did find by key, insert, remove by key. You hopefully implemented some version of those, at least on binary search trees. And we can also do find max and min. And on a binary search tree, that was nice and easy. On a hash table, we can do that. And the way you do that is you go at this, you go through all these buckets. You say, what keys are in bucket 0? What's the biggest one? What keys are in bucket 1? What's the biggest one? Go through all of them, and you can find the maximum or minimum that way. So yes, you can do it, but it's not efficient. It's not something you want to do. And similarly, if you want to like iterate through all the values in the hash table, that's what you do. You go through each bucket one at a time and look at all the keys in there. So any questions about any of these algorithms? Fairly straightforward procedure, I hope. So let's talk about, you know, doing our hashing with things which maybe aren't so straightforward. So one common thing we'll need to do is we'll need to hash strings. And so we have our function where we compute a hash table index. We want to take a string and a table size. We know we're going to take a hash of the string and mod it with the table size. So the question is, what is this function which takes a string and outputs its hash? And we want to satisfy those attributes that we talked about, that we want it to be fast, we want it to be evenly distributed, and we want it to be deterministic. And we have lots and lots of options here. If we only care about the things we absolutely need to do for a hash table to behave correctly, but not be fast, we could just return 0. But we probably don't want to do that because everything ends up in bucket 0. So let's talk about some simple options we could do. So one thing we could do is we could return the first character. It's really fast, and it's not completely horrible. It's not great because in real data sets, you have lots of common first characters. Like if you have names, like some of those first characters will be more common than others. A lot of them won't be used. And well, we're returning like something that's going to be used as an index for like a, you know, 1,000 entry table, and we only are using like 12 of the entries. Yeah.
Returning the first character is not what's on the screen right now. This is for summing all the characters.
The first hash function, the one at the top, is returning the first character.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes. I should probably do this. This one. So another option would be summing all the characters. So that at least, you know, we at least use everything. You know that? And, you know, we have an unsigned long for the sum, so it's, you know, it's going to fit in there probably. And this gets us some distribution, but we have the same sort of conflict problem that was mentioned with birth dates, that, you know, A, B, and B, A are the same thing, and, you know, B, B, and A, C are the same thing, so we're going to have some spurious conflict. It's not going to be as evenly distributed as we might like. Another thing you can do, another example of slightly more sophisticated, is we can say, take our sum and just multiply times 37 each time. So this is computing the same thing as if we take string I times 37 to the I. And note that, well, this, if you have a long string, we're multiplying times 37 a whole bunch of times, this is going to overflow. We don't care. As long as the overflow happens consistently, which with unsigned integers in C++, it will. It's going to just take the mod of the maximum value. It's going to wrap around back to zero. That's fine. Because we just need it to be deterministic. We don't need it to be mathematically sensible. This will get us a wide distribution. And if you look at the default hash function in the GCC standard library, it's something known as, I believe, the standard library on the lab machine. So like if you use, there's something called, I think it's Murmur2. I'm not actually, it's some version of a hash function called Murmur, which, I mean, it sounds complicated, it has a name, but it's something kind of similar to this with like different operations than multiply and things like that in addition. But something with this level, sort of amount of operations that people have found works well. And that's the sort of thing that's often like a default hash function in something like the standard library, because you can have an unordered map or an unordered set of strings. It has a hash function that it chooses by default. And it's something kind of similar to this. You can look up on Wikipedia what that hash function is. I didn't show you the code because it involves some things we haven't really talked about, like bitwise XOR. So these are things we can do when we're constructing a hash function for something like strings. And well, if you can hash strings, you can come up with a reasonable way of hashing anything, because you just convert your thing to a string and do the same thing you would do. Or you can just use these strategies on any sort of data, right? If you have a list of items, you can do this sort of thing where you multiply by something and add together after somehow representing each item as an integer. This is a very generic way of hashing things. And so because we have these sort of strategies, it's pretty easy to make our hash tables work for any type of data. The only really tricky case is if you want have some sort of complex notion of when two things are equal. In which case, like, you can't just look at the bytes and say if they're the same, that's the only case in which the two things are equal. If that's not true, you need to think a lot more. Okay, so any questions on these string hash functions? So given that we know some possibilities for that, so let's go through an example of probably a more realistic use of our hash table. And that's going to be storing strings. So here we have to choose a hash function which isn't the trivial hash function, but in this case I'm just going to take the sum of each of the characters. And when I do that in C, what I was actually doing is summing the ASCII codes. I wasn't summing A equals 0, summing A is the ASCII code you look up in the table for. So we're going to take this, in this case, moderate table size, and we have a more realistic table size, which is 11, for reasons we'll talk about later, mostly. We commonly choose prime table sizes. The biggest reason to do it is probably that it can make up for your hash function not being great, as great as it should be. But we'll take the sum of all these characters, mod 11, and let's try to see how it's going to look when we insert these values. So if we want to insert the key foo, we're going to compute the hash of foo. And I did this in advance, and hopefully correctly. And it was 324. I just added up the ASCII characters. We take that mod 11. We get that it goes to bucket 5. So we insert that there. Take a bar. Get 309. Take 309 mod 11. We get that it goes to bucket 1. And we take baz, we get 317, we take that mod 11, we get that it goes to bucket 9. So this is the same procedure we have with integers, it's just that our hash function is not the trivial thing. So we compute this more complicated hash function, at least more complicated in the sense that you probably can't eyeball and say, oh yeah, that's 317, because I certainly don't know anyone who's memorized ASCII that well. But it's the same procedure otherwise. And finding is also the same procedure. When we find baz, we compute the hash, it's 317, we look in bucket 9, we find that it's there. When we look for quux, we compute the hash, it's also 467, I just can't correct my slides. It's 467, that goes to bucket 5, there's foo there, we don't get a match. Same sort of procedure. Okay, so any questions on this? So let's go back to our original case here. And let's say, so this is the original example I showed with integers. And let's go explore our problem here. We're going to insert another value. So we've inserted these first four values. We've inserted 7, 18, 41, and 34. And now we want to insert 11. So where does 11 go? At bucket 1. We're going to take h of 11 is 11, 11 mod 10 is 1. So it goes here. So we somehow need to represent that we have 41 and 11 there. And this is the case where we're going to get into our problems with hash tables not being constant time. So we have to choose some way of doing this, and there's going to be multiple options. I'm going to start by talking about probably the simplest and most commonly used option. And that's going to be basically to have a list here, and we're going to choose a linked list, and I'll talk about why in a second. But that means that, well, if we have multiple keys that go to the same place, we're going to be searching a normal flat list, and that's going to be potentially linear time. This is where that worst case linear time goes. So if I want to get my worst case, I just choose lots of other keys like 11, like 21, 31, 41, 51 in this case, because those all go to bucket 1 with this hash function and this table size. And I'm going to get my worst case where I'm searching through a number of values proportional to the size. So let's talk about what we're going to do to make this case work. We're going to hope that we've chosen our hash function so it's very rare. But we still need to handle it because if we have, 10,000 items in our hash, well, very rare things are going to happen. We're going to have some coincidence where some, if like 0.1% of those items conflict and we have 10,000 items, that's 10 of them. So we definitely are going to have to handle it. Even if our input is, pretty nice. So one way of handling this is that when we have our bucket and a hash table, we have our key. We also need to have some representation of, plus unused. Unused, we might have a special key value for that. And we're going to have a next pointer. So we're going to make every bucket a linked list. And so when we have two conflicts, like here 26 and 59, both go to bucket 4, we're going to just have a linked list of those items. And this means that when we search for a key to find it, we need to go through the first thing, we check if it matches. If it doesn't, we check its next pointer. And if it's not null, we keep going. And when we insert something, if we care about not having duplicates, when we insert something, we need to go and check to see if it's already there, checking all the entries. If we don't care about duplicates, well, we can just put it at the front of the linked list. We can make a new linked list node, copy key there, set the next pointer. And so this is by far the most common way of doing it. And I've seen both doing where we have an array of structures which have a next pointer and an array of pointers. And you know, they're basically the same. There's just a little difference in what the overhead is. You can do either, it's equivalent. The array of pointers does have the advantage of having now a natural way of saying the key's not there. No keys, no key is in this bucket. So in either case, we're ending up with a linked list of each item. And so our insertion and deletion code actually manages a linked list. But we hope, typically, the linked list is extremely short. And one question is, well, how short do we hope it is? And that depends on how we use our hash table. Because something we haven't gone over is like, how big do I make this table? And how big I make this table is going to affect that. So there's a quantity we deal with in hash tables called the load factor, which you can think of as the average number of elements per bucket. And when you design a hash table, you typically want to build it in a way where you have a target for what your load factor should be. If it's very, very low, then you have this giant table where almost all the entries don't do anything. We're just wasting space. If it's very high, then you have a lot of these linked lists that you actually end up traversing, and that's going to be slow. You aren't going to get that constant time behavior, which is why we're using hash tables instead of a balanced tree. And because we're using a linked list, it's going to end up being worse than a balanced tree, most likely, if you have a very high load factor. So typically, you'll see hash tables will target a load factor of like 1/2 to 1, that sort of range. But you can do all sorts of things. That's a typical thing to target. And a load factor of 1/2, you can think of as intuitively meaning that if I choose a random bucket about it and I count the number of things in its linked list, it has an average of 0.5. So usually it doesn't have anything, and like maybe 40% of the time it has 1, and like 10% of the time it has more than that. Something like that is what my distribution looks like. And the load factor, can tell us something about the average time for a find. So this is not sort of asymptotic because, well, I haven't said how the load factor gets set versus the size. But if we have a load factor of lambda, then when we're unsuccessful in a find, we're going to check about lambda items. On average, we have to check everything. Everything in that bucket, which they're usually lambda things. And if they're successful, we don't have to check everything because we're going to go through our linked list of like maybe 10 items, and on average, the thing we're looking for is the fifth, so sort of our average time is going to be 1 plus lambda over 2. So average is kind of a sketchy concept. So you might say, okay, so you're telling me that if I just look at a random workload, a workload where I'm accessing the hash table and average the times, this is what I'm going to see. Well, this is what you're going to see if like you choose random keys and things like that. Like, it's easy to come up with scenarios where this doesn't actually happen. So the easiest example is, maybe I choose really bad keys, really bad, hash function for what my keys are, or table size. So here, all my keys are 10, 20, 30. My load factor is 0.3. So you might say, well, based on what you said here, the average time per find operation, should be pretty small. Should be like, we should like be comparing, one-ish thing at most, and usually like 1/3 of a thing. But If we're usually looking at keys that exist, which is often the case, like we often look up keys that mostly already exist, then, well, usually our time is like 2. So this sort of notion of average depends on us actually accessing sort of random keys, which is not going to happen in the real world. And to know what really happens, well, you should measure performance. Also, like, even if our sort of keys are randomly distributed in our buckets, this also kind of, you know, this average assumes that the key we're looking up is at a random position in the linked list. That also often won't be true, because often you'll access things which are recently added, which means they're either closer to the head or the tail, depending on how you implement your linked list. So this is a useful way of thinking about what should be happening, but it's not a guarantee on performance. But this is what you want to think about when you decide, well, I can choose a whole bunch of load factors. What load factors should I try to make my hash table have? And this is the cost you are managing with that. But because hash tables depend on our hash function behaving correctly, we don't have any guarantees. Okay. So I mentioned I would talk about why we use a linked list. So with the load factors we talked about, like half or one, we have typically 1 or 0 items per bucket. You know, and if this is not going to happen, if we can't find a hash function which makes that happen, or a table size which makes that happen, probably we shouldn't be using a hash table. Like, if all the hash functions you can think of end up having like 100 things go to the same bucket, no matter how big you make the table, you probably should use a balanced tree. Because, you know, otherwise, because you're basically not getting the advantage of having that hash table look up. Like, it's not doing anything really. And when we don't have one, we probably are going to have like 2 or 3. So we don't actually care so much about asymptotic performance. So you might say, but balanced trees are better than linked lists, you know, on all those tables you showed off as big O, and they are. But this is not what we care about, because what we want to know is how fast is it for 2 or 3 items. In a linked list, well, we have one null pointer in their one item case, and like an extra pointer in the other case. And typically, when we want to figure out, is there anything else in the linked list, we search one pointer. We check one pointer, we find it's null, we stop. So our typical case for the linked list is we have an extra 8-ish bytes of space, and we check that 8 bytes to see if it's 0. That's the extra overhead we have because we have a list of items. In the typical case, because we know our buckets typically have 1 items. Now, we could use a vector. That's completely going to be correct. It's going to work. But that's not very efficient. Because if we have a vector for each bucket, well, now we're storing the size of the vector, the capacity, and we've allocated, presumably, some extra space because our vector is designed to let us make it grow efficiently. So we've wasted this whole bunch of extra space, much more space than a pointer would take up, most likely. So even though, yes, like iterating through the vector for big lists and the space overhead of a vector for big list is much less than a linked list, in this case, it's not going to be worth it. Because we're going to really care about that extra space for the size and capacity more than the pointers in our linked list, because we're typically going to have 1, maybe 2. And those 2 pointers are probably about the same size as the size and capacity of our vector. And balanced trees, well, if we have an empty balanced tree, we have 2 pointers. And we have to check both of them. And a balanced tree, like, is basically the same performance if you have size 2 or 3, where basically we're doing as much work as traversing a linked list of that size. Balanced trees only become interesting when they have more than 3 nodes in them. so any questions about these data structure choices? Okay. So with that all in mind, we got our fine performance. So our ideal fine performance is proportional to the load factor. And if our load factor is constant, it's actually constant. But this is with sort of the ideal hash function, where ideal means it like matches up correctly with the keys you're actually using. Yeah. So this is not something that's generally possible, because like if you give me a hash function, I can just say, okay, I'm gonna try all possible values, all my possible keys in this hash function, and I'm gonna only use the ones which map to bucket zero. Like, I can do that. So it's not, this is ideal given your use case hash function. It's not that there's some magic hash function that exists which makes it work. If you're doing proofs about this, when people look at this formally, one thing they'll often do is they'll not look at a single hash function, but say, like, we can find a hash function that works for the data or something like that. And our actual worst case is going to be theta of n. If I do that exercise where I try a bunch of values in your hash function and make sure I choose them all so they have a hash of zero, well, sorry. No. You have a linked list now that you were using instead of something like a balanced tree because you thought it would be very small. Okay, insert. So insert is still really fast, even if our load factor is bad, if we don't care about duplicates. If we don't care about inserting duplicate items, like if we somehow know what we're inserting is not already there, then it's actually big theta of one. We find the bucket, we put it at the head of the linked list, we're done. Note that we're not doing any sort of thing where we need to sort the linked list, we just always look through all the items anyways, and we assume there's not enough items to make sorting make sense. So for delete, it's going to be theta of the load factor, again, but you know, to find the item. And then we need to remove it. Removing from a linked list is theta of 1. You know, we just update a couple next pointers. So any questions about the big O of each of these operations? And load factors. Okay, so I've dealt with sort of our common case where we have a table set up and we have our hash function chosen, but there's a thing we actually care about in the real world, which is that, you know, I have an unordered set, I'm using that library, and how big should its table be? I just said, give me an unordered set of strings, and I just like start inserting student names in there, and I expect it to work efficiently. How does it choose its table size? How does it know what I'm doing? It can't. So what's our strategy for dealing with that? So we need to change the size of the table, and generally we're going to do this, we're going to have a load factor in mind. So, you know, when we're thinking about the size of our table, we're going to say that it's going to be C times the number of items I have, where C is like something between a half and one. Like, we can choose other values for C, but we're going to have this kind of target. But in practice, when we're implementing the abstract data type that I showed you at the beginning for sets and maps, what we're getting is a list of inserts. We don't get like an operation which is give me a hash table for this many items. We get here's an insert, here's an insert, here's an insert. So we want to adjust that so we're kind of in that range. So what do we do to change the table size? So like we have a vector that represents the buckets. So I have like my vector and my bucket data structure. Buckets, and I can't just do buckets.resize, new size. So like this is, of course, valid C++ code. It's going to compile and run, but it's not going to be correct. So what's the problem with doing that? I have a vector that represents my buckets. Just resize it. Yeah.
You place them all with mod table size.
Yes. So I expect to be able to find something based on its hash and based on mod of the table size. And when I change the table size, that means all my items are now in new locations. Maybe. Some of them won't be. Like if I double the size, you know, a lot of them might still be in the place they're supposed to be, but some of them will have moved. And later on, when I try to find that item, I'm going to look in its location based on the new size, because that's the whole point of resizing my hash tables, that I'm using those extra buckets. So we can't just resize it. We're going to need to actually do what's called rehashing. And we're going to recompute every single key's hash. So we're going to iterate through the entire table, the entire old table, and insert each key we find into the new table. So if you thought that, you know, vector resizing was kind of expensive, this is a lot worse. Because not only are we copying everything, probably, we're also computing a function on every key. And this is also part of why we care about the hash function being fast. Because if we have to do, because yes, we actually have to compute not just hash some key lookup, but on insert, we might have to do a lot of work. The same arguments for how we rehash are going to apply as far as complexity as for vector. So we're going to want to, you know, not when we rehash, not increase the size by like 1,000, but probably by a factor, and then we'll get, you know, at least amortize constant time as far as, you know, assuming our keys are evenly distributed. So we're going to do something similar to our strategy for resizing a vector, but it's not going to be the same constraint. It's not going to, we don't rehash when we run out of space because we never run out of space. We can always add, cram more things in our hash table by making those linked lists bigger. So usually what we'll do is we'll track the load factor. Typical implementations will count the number of items that they have for the purpose of knowing, oh, my load factor got pretty big. And when the load factor gets big enough, they'll make the table bigger. So for example, java.utils hash tables, their default policy is that when the load factor gets above 0.75, they grow the table size. And you can choose a threshold like that. So that's a typical way of implementing this. There's other things you could do. You could say, I'm going to do this only when, you know, insert fails, you know, about a big list. We haven't talked about avoiding linked list yet. But we could have some other, you could imagine some other policies for when you do this, but typically we track the load factor to do that. So insert, yeah, fails too slow. Yeah. You could also imagine a policy like where you look at the length of your linked list or something like that. You have a limit to the length of your buckets or something, and you try to rehash to fix it. But typically, we're going to just have this threshold. We might set it to 0.75, we might set it to 1, but that's how we're going to decide when to rehash. So rehashing, I said that like we basically iterate through everything, you know, and we have something worse than vector insertion. And in a big O sense, because of our worst case, is that I chose all my keys poorly. So I could have chosen my keys, so originally they all hashed in the same bucket, and when I resized my hash table, they still hashed in the same bucket. An easy way of doing this is if I can like make my hash function like always give 0 for a whole bunch of keys. Like in that bad month minus 1 hash function I showed you earlier. So if we had that sort of thing, then rehashing might be quadratic time. Like really bad in the worst case. Typically, it's going to be about linear time because each of the new inserts is going to be about constant time. Because hopefully, our new hash table has basically 1 item per bucket or 0. Okay. So any questions on So that's on rehashing. So this is everything you need to know to implement a hash table that works pretty well and has all the operations we care about. You can do inserts, you can do deletes, you can do finds, you can handle adjusting its size dynamically by just tracking this load factor and doing something like you would do with a vector of like doubling the size or increasing it by 50% or something like that. And that will get you a working hash table. So we're going to talk about some alternate ways of implementing hash tables, which people do, but are less common. And the main reason I think they're less common is because they're less applicable to general purpose libraries. So one of these things is about linked lists. So in our hash tables, you know, that we described, we use a linked list. And we had alternatives to linked lists, but they were all like basically worse. But a linked list is still, you know, for many applications, seems pretty bad. So if our keys are strings, this doesn't seem so bad. But if our keys are like ints and our values are ints, then this next pointer, well, that's 8 bytes on our lab machines. And I have 8 bytes of actual data. So I'm like half my space and is being spent on these linked list overhead. And remember, usually I have one item per bucket. And if you're concerned about this, there are strategies for saying, well, you know, since I usually don't need that next pointer, is there a way I can avoid that? And there is. So one alternative is that instead of having a linked list, we'll just put the key in the next bucket. You know. So in this case, all of them go to the same bucket. And so we'll just say that we're going to search, you know, instead of searching the linked list, when we find a key and it doesn't match, we're going to go to the next bucket until we find an empty bucket. And if we usually have a load factor of like 1/2, then usually there's like an empty bucket to find relatively quickly. So this is pretty performant. Okay. So this, you know, has the nice advantage of being basically the most space efficient thing you can do, and it's still basically as fast, because it's still usually the case that you look where you're going and you find the value right away. We just have this rare case that it's a bit harder, but we've saved a bunch of space in our whole table and handling it. Yeah, but this makes a lot of things more complicated. So for example, let's say we have this situation. We have 2 values that go to bucket 2 and 1 value that goes to bucket 3. And we insert the 2 values in bucket 2 first. So we have 13, then 25. Now we insert the value in bucket 3. And, well, we can't put it where bucket 3 is, so we just go to the next space. And we've kind of merged these two lists. And if we insert in a different order, we might get this. We inserted 13, then 38, then we wanted to insert 25. We can't put it where 13 is, so we go to the next bucket. Can't put it where 38 is, go to the next bucket. That was empty, and it ended up there. So we'll end up with something like this, where we'll have the keys from 2 different hash values mixed together. So this is a thing which can happen. And this should raise alarm bells in your head that, whoa, this makes removal harder. And also, how often does this sort of problem happen? So next time, we'll talk about ways of improving this and give you the sad story about removal, which is that it's not very good for this strategy.